Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
At Community Bank, we're here for every part of your financial journey. From personal banking to growing your business or buying a home, our expert guidance makes it simple. We're more than a bank. We're your partner for life's biggest moments. Community Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This show was previously recorded.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
So dressing for television is a little bit of a challenge.
Paul was always fun at about eight in the morning, and after we'd put in 2 hours, and he'd be like, on a Monday, he's like, "Man, I don't know if I like his TV."
Keep having to look.
What
at
do you
things.
Mean you don't know if you like it? You're the star.
You're
come
here.
On, man. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, you own this. But he was always so much fun because he's like, I'm a radio guy. Didn't grow up in this television and streaming stuff.
We came up literally because we wanted to be in a dark room at night with nobody bothering us.
Hey,
we could be on the radio.
You like have prayers. You go,
exactly.
Lord, just let me have a job where I don't have to deal with people and
so,
no one has to see me.
But
and
things change.
Yeah, that's
things
right.
Things do change. I used to believe that when you became a writer that your publisher just dropped in the checks after you wrote this magnificent manuscript. But of course, that's not true either. What actually happens is you got to go out and promote it just like it was a new car. And that's part of the fun of it. It makes you a better writer, I think. And if you're in that ivory tower too long, you don't really know what's going on around you. So that's a good morning from Paula.
Thank you, Paula. I know what you're up to today. Work.
Work, work, work,
work.
Well,
work.
That's what we love. We love Saturday work because we're working too.
The dogs need Paula and probably some cats too.
You better believe it. Paula may need earmuffs today. Today is National Earmuff Day.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
I've never owned a pair of earmuffs. That's like I have all of the headband stuff for hunting and all that good, but I've never actually owned a pair of earmuffs. Yeah.
Well,
do you own earmuffs?
It was a skater. I have at other times. Mm-hmm. I don't happen to have any right now. But
Beats by Dre is like earmuffs now.
I believe that is the equivalent of today.
Okay.
But this kid's ears were cold. He's 15 up in Maine back in the 19th century. And he said, "Grandma, see this wire? Could you help me do this?" And they wired up some things and put on some beaver fur, and that was the first earmuffs. He went on to patent it. His name was Chester Greenwood, and he made quite a living selling earmuffs. So
hey, don't
overlook your kids' good ideas.
I mean, the movie Cocktail, they talk about the flugelbinder, right? The little thing on the end of your laces on your shoes. You never know what will hit it, but an earmuff seems like an obvious one. It was like
wouldn't you think?
I think it was Pope Innocent VIII in the 1400s that said, "Yeah, witchcraft's not a good thing." And you're going, "Wow, that took a long time."
That's a minute.
Yeah,
think that would have
same with earmuffs. I think people have had cold ears for a long time. I can't believe it.
Got tired of wrapping towels around their head, But having never lived in a particularly Arctic environment, I can't speak to as much of it. But I do know that they can be very cute, and particularly the ones you see nowadays as gifts are in fact headphones with earmuffs on the outside.
Just, right. I think it's Beats by Dre or whomever. Has figured that out. They're like, "Man, let's put a 2-in-1 here."
The Champion Ear Protector.
Okay.
I guess it would protect you from other stuff.
Hearing stuff that you don't want to hear. I love the terminology, like Bose and those, they have the noise-canceling.
Noise-canceling. Yeah, like, good luck.
I doubt they work that great.
Can you get the stuff inside my head to stop? Don't think so.
What noise are we talking about?
That's right. Which one? Did you have any idea? I really didn't. I'm a Bayberry candle gal. I had no idea it was such an elite form of candle.
Mm-hmm.
Bayberry is a delightful plant. When we grow the myrtles, when we grow our native myrtle, we have a wonderful opportunity to have that same kind of smell around us, even though it's the northern tree that actually began that, because it was a colonial sort of invention. I always think there are a whole lot of things like that. You know, handkerchiefs with essential oils on them and all that kind of thing came from that era, because they were so surprised, I think, when they got to America at how bad they smelled after about a minute.
Like,
you know,
it's been a year since I've had a shower.
So they did go through a lot of steps to make that happen. And nowadays, of course, we as gardeners face those issues, but we just generally put on a little bit more insect repellent or sunscreen or something else that smells and move on, you know, keep going.
I've had my I've always liked the essential oils, but yeah. For the first one I've had in a while, and I don't know where all of mine are, but I bought some tea tree oil the other day, and boy, that has a smell to it. It's almost like
it's
a medicinal.
Distinct. Yeah, it's very distinct. Yeah,
so not like peppermint or anything, but it's sandalwood will kind of take the air out of your, you know, the wind.
It's very strong. You don't need to have that in a closed space.
But the tea tree was unique. I'd always read about it a lot and didn't know what your
opinion.
Well,
and it's in all sorts of products.
It is, yeah.
So you'll run into it for, you know, all kinds of self.
Say it's good for skin, and you know, and during the winter, mine gets a little bit itchy at times. And I was like, you know, maybe I'll try a little tea tree oil this year and mix it with a little coconut oil. And man, you're talking about lighting you up a little bit. That was
coconut
refreshing.
Oil.
You got to have a carrier oil, as they say.
That would be interesting as a combination. Fascinating stuff.
It was smooth, but it definitely makes you, you know, tingle a little bit. I was very impressed.
I had no idea that, this I did too have an idea, but I really had no idea how dry skin was going to affect everybody that I know. You know, it's one of those, you think about gardeners and getting our hands in water all the time, and sometimes even our feet, and, you know, people talk about having to do stuff about that, but it's really everybody. And I don't know if the air is drier. I don't believe that. But there's something going on. All of us are having that sort of different reaction in our skins.
Mine goes, I don't know what it is from winter to winter. And I've always been curious if there was a plant other than, I mean, I've used aloe in the summer a good bit. But, you know, your aloe kind of wants to, gets a little bit light green. And I'm not sure how pungent the medicinal quality is during the winter, but my three that I got from Doris Berry, it had to be a year and a half ago. They've done very well, and so, you know, it's time to move them in. But is there something for your skin that grows naturally? Any of the essential oils or any of the base, say, carriers that you would recommend for, you know, the itchiness that people get during the winter if they're trying to stay organic or something they could
most of the time you'll find products that have aloe in them but also have something else to make them slightly, maybe mineral oil, sometimes maybe safflower oil. I've seen sometimes it's just with another kind of some other sort of gel formation thing because they're trying to keep it from drying your skin out, and that really does help a lot. Most of those products, shea oil, shea butters, all those kind of things are processed from natural products, natural things, but you can't go get it off the tree.
Right. So it sounds like when you do a little research into those things like coconut oil and olive oil and, I guess it's jojoba and the others, that it's however the process is from picking it in the first cold press, that seems to have a lot of, it contains more of the nutrients, right?
Of course, the whole business of post-harvest physiology makes a big difference. If you take a zucchini that's perfectly healthy off the plant and then lay it on the back steps for a week, it's not going to be the same as if you bring it indoors and put it in the refrigerator. You know, we have to handle things in the proper way. One of the things that I'm encouraging right now in the newsletter is the treatment of greens as you cut them from the garden, because you want to use them for garlands or for a wreath or to make a candle ring or something like that to decorate with. But if you don't condition those stems, and by that I mean cutting them off at a sharp angle with a single blade knife, and then taking a little, very tack hammer, not, you know, no sledges here, take a tack hammer and just tap gently on the bottom of it to crush that stem a little bit. Things like juniper and cypress, you know, you can even do it with magnolias and sasanquas. Then put it into a warm bucket of water overnight, and your garland or your wreath or your whatever project you're doing is going to last a lot longer. It can then be misted, and that'll help absorb some more water. But if you will condition them before you use them, you're not going to have as much loss. And I think that's we go and get the plastic ones sometimes just because We know they're not going to wilt on us. We know they're not going to drop a bunch of needles all over the house. You know, it's all good. It's going to look better when the relatives get here on Christmas Eve. But it is really wonderful to have some of these local, very, very backyard decorations. I'm looking right now at a really beautiful ilex, this one in particular. This is Vomitoria. It's the Yopon. And it's
Vomitoria?
Very, yeah.
Some of these names always blow my mind.
It's a misnomer.
Okay.
They thought that it was going to work for those kinds of issues, but it's actually another plant. They misunderstood what they were looking at, but that's the name it has kept all these years. And it's beautiful berries, just gorgeous, really pretty. I like Nandina as well. You know, they're pretty too. Looking at some Sasanquas at supertalk.tv right now that are just lovely, full bloom. That's the same one that I have here, and it's a really gorgeous plant. I really do like the whole Sasanqua camellia season because it's flowers for weeks and weeks and weeks, and if you add Lenten roses, then you've covered everything from the ground to hip high and then over the trees over your head. So it's kind of fun. It's a delightful thing. Oh, see, now Paula's coming in with us. There's a almond oil. She's going to talk us about coconut oil or almond oil after a shower. Once upon a time in a movie, I saw a really fancy shower, and ever since then I've thought, one of these could have some kind of conditioning oil coming out of it, you know, six different things, six shower heads. So I'm with you on that, Paula. I am with you on that one, Paula. Who's calling us this morning, Lance?
Well, we have our first Christmas cactus call, I think, and it's Tricia in Van Cleve, and she has some questions for the expert here.
Okay. Good morning, Tricia. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Okay, what it is, I've got some Christmas cactuses, some pieces that has broke off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to get them to root, what do I need to do? Can I put them in water to root them, or do I need to put them down in dirt?
Do they have flowers on them?
Now, there is one piece that does have some blooms on them.
Okay. The one that broke off that has flowers on it, put it into water because it only cover like the bottom leaf. You know, don't put them in a lot of water. But that that's going to be a pretty decoration, and it might root. It's really hard, in my experience, it's difficult to get them to root when they've already gone into bloom because their energy is already out there. So the others, though, that don't have flowers on them, I like to do about a 4-inch cutting, maybe 6 if it's small leaves, but 4 inches is usually about the best. And then I'm going to use a mixture of potting soil that's good potting soil, and some kind of other thing like perlite, something that's going to loosen it up a little bit more. You might have you might have some other product to do that with. But put them in little pots and literally stand the cutting in it, water the pot first, and then slip the cutting into it. If you have some rooting hormone, I'll put a little bit of that on the bottom of it. But the main thing about it is to keep them supported and keep them not wet and not dry. I know that's terrible.
Okay.
Isn't that awful? I hate when people tell me, not this and not that, but just a little bit damp. Sometimes you can even do it with a mister. Just spray the top of the soil.
All right. The one to put down in dirt, don't put the whole thing down in the dirt, right?
No, just if you've got a 4-inch cutting, put about an inch into the dirt.
Okay. All right. But I hope it roots.
I hope it does, too. Keep them inside and keep them in doesn't have to be direct sun or anything, but a bright window would help. And if you feel like they're getting kind of dry looking, take a mason jar and put over the top of the pot, or put some of the pots inside a plastic box. You know, just raise the humidity around them a little bit.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
I'm glad yours are blooming. Take care of yourself. Thank you. You know, that's a really good question. What do you do when the part falls off?
Yeah.
And sometimes we get that sometimes even with poinsettias. A branch will break off and somebody will say, well, can I root that? Well, you might can, but I would simply put it in water and enjoy it as a cut flower, because you probably aren't going to see a lot of rooting from something that's broken like that. When it doesn't have flowers on it, that's a different story. That's a different story.
I love the Christmas cactus, though. It is. I think it's our first call on the Christmas cactus.
I think
cactus
it is.
So
we
far.
Usually have more pictures by now, too.
Right.
But mine have been very slow. I've got some flowers, but they're not as spectacular as they were last year for whatever reason. I don't know what reason, but for whatever reason.
There are reasons.
Yeah, there always are.
That's the world of plants.
Well, I see that you have, at supertalk.tv, you have posted my lovely Merlotan soup.
Oh, that looked delicious. I mean, I saw that. I was like,
yeah.
Where in the world did she find that? Merlotan soup. What all is in a Merlotan soup?
Well, it starts with the Merlotan. And Merlotan is a squash. It's one of the, you know, the squash family is really interesting.
I love
it's got
squash.
So many things in it, from pumpkins to summer squash mm-hmm. to winter squash, acorn squash, all those kind of things.
It's an identity crisis.
I really do think that somewhere along the way, you know, somebody's out there as we speak trying to figure out the genetics of this plant family mm-hmm. because it's so complicated. Widely used around the world. Some are used for vessels. We talked about the pumpkins over the Halloween time with, you know, how they were basically just holders for something else at the beginning, and the inside was used as animal food. But then we learned how to bake, and that's a whole different, you know, different category. The Merlotan is technically, okay, we got cucumbers, we got squashes, we got gourds, we got pumpkins, you know, this whole big family of things. And I got to say that Merlotan, or as you will sometimes hear it called, Merlotan, or you will also hear it chayote, which is the name for it in Spanish, or as I heard of it in California, coyote squash, which I thought was terrible. It was just a corruption of every other name of it. Coyote, I don't know if coyotes like it or not, but it's a very mild squash. And it is one that takes all summer to bear, so it's harvested right in time for anything you're doing in the autumn, whether you're stuffing something or making a soup like this or whatever it is. But it's very, very mild, so you're trying not to overpower it so you can still taste it, and that makes it an obvious vehicle for shrimp. So that's how that all goes together. It's a little bit of chicken broth, a little bit of vegetable broth, but not a whole lot of anything, really. I cooked it the other day, and I'm enjoying it.
This was your creation. It looks beautiful.
Well, it's not
beautiful.
My creation, but I cooked it.
No, yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you made it, though. It looks beautiful.
Thank you. Well, the hardest part about Merlotans is finding them. So when you see them in your grocery stores, you should by all means. I mean, you don't. You'll read a recipe and it'll tell you to get 10. You don't really need 10 unless you have a really big family. So just buy what you find and make some soup. It's also pretty good other ways, too. Ooh, we got some more recipes for dry skin. Powdered milk in your bath. We'll talk
really?
About that.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, we'll see
what
that's
about. The sweet and condensed stuff. Can I use that, too?
There's something to think about. I'm going to contemplate that. Probably say no. We'll be right back.
On the second day of Christmas, my sweetheart said to me, two cowboy hats and a ticket to a NASCAR race.
Listen and watch all your favorite Super Talk Mississippi shows live and on demand. Listen to tons of music. Plus, get the latest breaking news from across the state with the Super Talk Mississippi app. The Super Talk Mississippi app. Download the Super Talk app on your iPhone or Android device now for free. Just search Super Talk Mississippi in your app store on your mobile device to get everything Mississippi all in one place. The Super Talk Mississippi app. Get it now. You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. Do you have an old, outdated website or just a Facebook page and still not bringing in customers? Targeted digital advertising from STMM Digital's highly trained and trusted staff is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today. Nowadays.
This show was previously recorded.
Sitting home on Christmas Eve, me and the missus, kids were fast asleep in bed when she said, let's do the dishes. Now I'm not fond of housework boys, and I dread doing dishes.
So I says to the missus, the tree's not dressed, the toy's not out, so I'd best get at it. She says me there.
That's really funny.
Oh, good one.
Where have you found all this?
That one's from Batteries Not Included, the polka version.
Ah, you know, the polka version, of course.
You know me and polka and the accordion, so yeah.
Strangely enough, I do.
Hey, one thing, I have one little piece of information.
He doesn't two-step, y'all, but no, he can polka.
Yeah, I can polka now, come for on. Sure, man. That looks fun. Hey, the bayberry plant, I was just doing a little deep digging,
yes.
And the scientific name for it is the same way that George Bush said America. America.
Oh, okay.
America.
All right. Yes,
America.
Yes, it is. Yes, America. It is. It's America. That's right.
I thought I saw that. I'm like, man, that's George Bush, man.
I was listening to something yesterday about the dropping of the R at the end of, you know, and one mm-hmm. of the examples that they gave, in fact, was, well, some people just drop off the A at yeah. the beginning of America.
Texans, like, yep, apparently.
Apparently people in Texas. Good morning from Stacy in Madison. This is a great question, because this is the perfect time to be dealing with these kind of issues. Need advice on fast-growing evergreen barrier to block unsightly neighbor. Okay, well, let's just say for privacy. Your neighbor might be unsightly, but you need privacy anyway. If you have a space that is 10 feet wide between you and that neighbor, I'm going to suggest that you do a three-row situation. I'm going to suggest that you plant the biggest trees you can find of a particular sort. Now, for example, if you wanted to be a 15-foot tall barrier, you might get crepe myrtles, or you might get sasanquas, or you might some other medium-sized tree. And then the next thing you're going to do is come in between it with some shrubbery that's almost impenetrable. And by that, I mean either Eleagnus or a big Burford holly or something else that you might see at the garden center. And then finally, because we want something that's particularly pretty, you're going to put something across the front that's maybe Japanese spirea. They're not going to be a part of the barrier itself, but they will give good contrast to the other plants, and they will also give you some flowers at a time of the year when you might not otherwise have some. That would be early spring. So I'm saying you need to do three things. You might choose a cypress tree. You might choose any number of our larger trees, depending on how big you want to get. But if you only need about 8 feet tall, then why not do Eleagnus? Buy the biggest ones you can, plant them close together, and just let that be it, and then plant something on the inside on your side that's pretty, some other, you know, flowering shrubs or something else that can use that Eleagnus as a backdrop. So it really does depend on how tall you need the barrier to be, whether you need it to be deciduous or you want it to be evergreen. And frankly, if you've got a space that's 10 feet wide, you'll be wise to do a combination of smallish trees, to, you know, less than 20 feet, and some shrubs. Okay? Does that sound right? I hope that sounds like a smart answer.
Hey, and by the way,
that's what I would do.
Yeah, if your loved one, you're looking for a very unique gift for your loved one this holiday season, I have a couple of great ideas. One would be a gift certificate to Mark Patrick's flower arranging and plant business. That would be,
you want to
surprise somebody and you don't really know how to do all
not
this
like
stuff.
Flower arranging in the vase.
Yeah,
but,
no, it's a little plants. Bit, yeah, a little different. He can run by and check it out. And two, Garden Mama's coffee. If you have not
Thank
had
you.
It, please take the time to get you some. I think you'll be blown away at the flavor, the changes of blends, and the love that goes into it. Two great gifts, though, to me.
We have some folks waiting for it today,
yes.
In fact, because we've had so much rain, we haven't been able to roast for the last couple of days.
It happens,
that's happening this here
is,
over the weekend.
This is batch, special batch
it's,
stuff.
It's, you know, it's small batch
right.
and very special. And I thank you very much for your kind plug.
Well, no, I mean it sincerely, though.
I was going to say, because I know you don't talk about things you don't like.
Right. Well, I mean, you got to have passion for the things
I'm going to give you one that I know you don't like, because I just feel it in my heart. Today, my friend, is rhubarb vodka day.
Hey, I'll drink it. I just, you know, this rhubarb stuff is, I'm learning, right? I'm on the learning curve of rhubarb.
Nope. That
what
is,
all
that's
can
not
be
what
done.
I'm looking for.
No, I'll try it, but I can't say that I'll like it. I'm not Mikey in Life Cereal, you know. There's no guarantee there.
I thought to myself, you know, of all the things to do with rhubarb, I mean, I have had it
rhubarb
in a pie,
vodka.
And it was good.
Yeah.
You know, bebop a rebop rhubarb pie, that whole business. But I didn't make it. because it's not, you know, part of my bailiwick.
It just seemed to me like.
But when, can parsnip vodka be far behind? Is the question.
When you know the word rhubarb when it's said, and I don't know where this association came from, Jim, but every time the word rhubarb is said, I think of a Studebaker, like the old truck. I don't know why. I mean, it's just, you know, it's burned in my head.
Well,
I don't know
in
if it was like
head,
when I was a kid, there was
in
rhubarb
my head,
pie.
I hear Red Barber talking about the rhubarb where both of the benches emptied in some baseball game.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, there's not a whole lot of positives, you know,
it's
that I
really
had in my
not.
Life before now.
And it does grow beautifully in other parts of the world besides the Deep South. There's there's a few hoots and hollers in the Deep South where people can grow rhubarb, but mostly we're at their mercy. You know, we can't really produce a whole lot of it. I got to tell you, though. The funniest part about this is what I learned. I learned that you can actually apply to the National Day people, just like we talk about these crazy calendars all the time. And if you can make your case, they will add your event. This is going to open up a whole can of worms for me. But this is the Maple River Distillery in Castleton, North Dakota. They invented, obviously someone had a lot of rhubarb, they invented rhubarb vodka in 2010, introduced it to the United States market, I should say. I'm sure other people had made it in 2010, and they are the ones that in 2013 called for this day.
Huh.
So they are the reasons. We don't have to go to North Dakota, but we can celebrate like we were in North Dakota today by having a rhubarb vodka. Sorry.
Okay. Well, you can't. I've not ever seen it. I don't go to a liquor store that often. But next time I'm there, I'm going to look and see. Yeah, if that's something that is available here.
Honeysuckle, yes.
Hey, I'm a big fan. I think Cathead's version of that was wonderful.
Our friends over there at Cathead do a real good job. But I don't know about this.
That was one of the few that you can. You know, you'll get something new that hits the market. I remember. I can't remember all of them. It was like Screwball. It was that. Peanut butter flavored. Oh, it's delicious. I mean, every now and again, something new comes in. You're like, oh, now that's a game changer. Not too often, though, but
we
that honeysuckle
suggestion
like that.
From Ray in Long Beach. It's particularly good in those frozen things.
Oh, man, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Pampas grass and cattails makes a hardy, thick barrier that is impenetrable to most everything except cats.
Okay, yeah.
Thank
cats
you very
can
much,
do
Ray.
About anything.
I do like grasses as part of that mix, especially if you're using a big shrub like Eleagnus or something. Put them in front of it or on either end or maybe as part of the middle or something, just because when you're making a barrier, you do want to have something to look at. You know, otherwise you just put a fence up and paint it, you know, so that we need to have a view as well. So I like that idea. Thank you, Ray. Appreciate that. Very, very important.
I love to have a backdrop with some pretties in front of it.
Yes.
I love the when I see some of the pics that Mark will share, he's so good at that, too, is the layering effect. Mm-hmm. And
it makes a big difference in the way that we see things. When we're able, it's not quite like a plate of food, but it almost is. There's a centerpiece, there's things around it, and then there's the actual base of it. And oftentimes that is in architecture when it comes to the garden. So a container sitting out at the end of a driveway in the middle of a yard isn't going to look as dramatic as one that has a backdrop of a porch or even just the front part of the house, you know, because you need that contrast. And he's really good at finding those spots and filling them with beauty. Better than, shall we just say, better than me.
He has a little salesmanship in him. I remember one of my mentors when I was learning to bartend at a higher level, not like just open a beer, you know, but about wines and learning. Yeah. He's like, you know, you're going to mess stuff up here and there, but if it looks pretty, they're going to like it. Kind of the way flowers and plants are. You know, it may not be exactly what you wanted.
I think the biggest piece of that is making sure that people know which ones are going to need to come out of this container and which ones are going to stay in it all the time.
Right, right.
I have a real fondness for large containers planted with a small, you know, 3-foot shrub in the middle, and then some bulbs that are going to come and go, and then some seasonal something else. You know, right now it would be pansies or snapdragons or something, because I like the change. Other people want things to look exactly the same day after day, year after year. Well, there's good reason for that in a design sense. It doesn't please me, but it might please you, and it will take more maintenance, actually, than what I'm talking about, because you have to keep things pruned. And if you lose one, then you have to replace it. So it all depends on what you decide you're going to do with a space And in that big container particularly, you got to know what's going to come and what's going to go and what can actually be there all the time. It's another good use for small nandinas, small spireas, those kind of things that have a really bright couple of seasons, but the rest of the time you would want other things to be interesting. Maybe daffodils, maybe like me, you have a fondness for gray hyacinths, and so you fill it with that because they're so pretty. I love a juga in that kind of a container because it'll just lay there flat until it blooms, and then it's a big surprise. So it's a lovely, lovely place to containerize things. And of course, Mark Patrick is the best. So I got a question for you. Everybody talks about what are we going to eat in the next century? You know, what are we going to be doing to feed protein sources? I was reading a piece the other day that apparently 45% of people want more protein now. You know, the people always want something else in their diet. Now they want more protein. Crickets are high in protein. Mealworms are high in protein. Those are things you can already find in your world. But wouldn't it be wonderful if we could eat the bugs that bother us, that bother our plants? For example, if there was a mosquito tweel, I would probably eat that, you know, just let's go, get it done. Turns out, not our southern shield stink bug, or not the brown marmorate, but yet another stink bug, it has been the preferable snack, way of getting out of the crops and into containers to eat. This particular one, India's Mizoram state, they've been having this for years and years and years. The Guardian's reporting to us, rather, Nazara virigula. Every few years, when the bamboo-feeding stink bugs get after it, the people get after the stink bugs. And the recipes are generational. There's been, you know, it's been going on for years and years. And it turns out it's another fantastic protein source. So I feel certain that someone, as we speak, is writing a grant to study stink bug proteins with the brown marmorates and the southern green, because both of those are pests, terrible pests. If we could find a reason to use them for something else, that'd be great. You don't need to raise them. All you'd have to do would be collect them.
Yeah, somebody would figure out how to make a hamburger out of them.
They've been eating this stuff for more than 100 years. They call it thong nong. I love that. Just really funny stuff. You know, there are a lot of people that can't imagine eating whatever you eat, whatever your favorite thing is. There's somebody in the world that can't imagine it. So if you think that you can't imagine that, trust me. Oh my goodness!
Would they use the bamboo for bait, basically? Then, if they consume that much of
exactly,
so that's their way of attracting them. And when they show up, they say,
also
"We got you."
Keeps the bamboo from being ruined for its harvest. So it's a real symbiotic system. Nathan, beautiful grandbaby, and makes a honeysuckle jelly. I like it. I've never had that.
Oh, I would love a honeysuckle jelly. Can this be found?
Well, Nathan makes it. So
yeah, I mean, I've never.
I have a feeling we'll have to wait a while.
Yeah.
But what a beautiful grandbaby. Congratulations. My goodness. That's so sweet. Oh, thank you very, very much. Some would say this is a Thanksgiving cactus because of those claw leaves. Corinne, you're right about that, but she likes the red and calls it her Christmas cactus. So that's how plants get so many different names. We give them the names that we want them to have, like, you know, pets. Famous Far Side cartoon is the names we give pets and the names they give themselves, and it is pretty hilarious, if, you know.
Yeah, I'll let my pets name themselves, basically. That's kind of my...
Hawk name
themselves. Well, you let them hang around for about a week, and then you go, okay. All right, that's what he is, or that's what she is. And they never fail.
I'm going to read this because it's a shameless plug for my newsletter, and I appreciate Corinne so much. Loved your festive newsletter yesterday. Kudos to you and your daughter. Every gardener should be getting your informative newsletter. Great gift for friends.
Amen.
Yes, it
there
is.
You go.
Thank you.
Shameless plug. I will agree.
Appreciate it.
I get it for free, y'all.
You do. Trust me.
I get
me,
to contribute a little
he
bit.
He earns it. Yeah. Yes, he has to put up with me. So, trust me.
No, it's not
putting
up with
you. Well, here's the thing. You can't do the same thing over and over again. So we changed the format a couple of years now and several times. This particular version of newslettering, I've been doing this will be the sixth, well, actually, it's volume seven going, starting in January. So it's a different thing, but it's not really any different in the way I approach things. So I just, if you like it, send me a note, mamaonair@yahoo.com. We'll get you on, okay? Thank you. Appreciate that. Here we go again, y'all. I guess Rudolph's going to be in here somewhere. Stick around.
Well, Santa looked a lot like Daddy. Our Daddy looked a lot like him. It's not the way I had him pictured. Santa was a much too thin. He didn't come down the chimney, so Mama must have let him in. Santa looked a lot like Daddy, and Daddy looked a lot like him.
Listen and watch all your favorite Super Talk Mississippi shows live and on demand. Listen to tons of music. Plus, get the latest breaking news from across the state with the Super Talk Mississippi app. The Super Talk Mississippi app. Download the Super Talk app on your iPhone or Android device now for free. Just search Super Talk Mississippi in your app store on your mobile device to get everything Mississippi all in one place. The Super Talk Mississippi app. Get it now. You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. Do you have an old, outdated website or just a Facebook page and still not bringing in customers? Targeted digital advertising from STMM Digital's highly trained and trusted staff is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305. Or go to stmmdigital.com to get started.
Hey, this is Bob, and if you're... Show was previously recorded.
It won't be the same there if you're not here with me. And when those blue, it's snowflakes, it start falling.
You've put the animals to work.
Of course. I speak animal.
There's a great story about Mel Blanc that he woke up from surgery and was doing these voices. Kind of drove everybody crazy. He was not in that world yet. But anyway, it's one of those things that you hope is true. Even if it isn't, you hope it is. I have a question for you. I just love this. Ray's in Clinton, you know, Sandy and Ray, some of our very favorite folks. They're suggesting merloton that is stuffed with shrimp and breadcrumbs and whatnot. And yeah, everybody loves. I mean, that's a delicious dish. If you've ever felt that stuffed bell peppers were a little too heavy, you want stuffed merloton because it's different. But it's still a cornbready kind of a dressing. Usually, sometimes it's rice, but it'll have shrimp in it. And it's really delicious. It's a good one. Very nice. But they want to know if they can plant ivy this time of the year. They are out in Clinton. And the question is, if it's in one of your beds that I know of that are well prepared, yes. But you do have to watch out, because if they're fully leafed out now, as it sounds like they are, this is probably English ivy, maybe Algerian, but probably English. It's going to be subject this first year to some cold damage in, say, February when things ice up for a week. So my suggestion would be to leave them in the containers and keep them wherever you have them now to take care of them. And then just as soon as it begins to look like, you know, things have turned, maybe late February, early March, go ahead and plant it then. They are perennial. They are something that can be planted now, and especially if you have a situation where you're trying to prevent erosion or something like that, you probably should go ahead and do it and then just baby them through the winter. But because they are in good shape and looking good and have lots of leaves on them, I don't want you to put them out and have them immediately get damaged by either too much water before they can put out their new roots, or cold weather that simply just crisps up their leaves too much. So I would do either of those things. If you have to, sure, you can plant them. You'll just have to be babying them. But if not, wait until maybe late February would be my choice.
What is the trick to getting ivy to run and grow fast? I grew up with it around the house, and it's beautiful.
You know, there's so many people trying to get it to stop.
We had a whole wall that was covered, and then we had some foundation work done when I was younger, And it kind of ruined the ivy wall, which I hated because it was my room, and I thought it was cool, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we love the way it looks. It's not great for the brick wall, but
right, yeah.
The way that we get any of those things to spread, for example, if you're trying to get any kind of ground cover like that to spread or grow up a wall or whatever, part of it in the world of vines is nitrogen. So you want to make sure they get rooted well, but then after that, you're going to come in. If, for example, you might feed them in March, feed them again in June, feed them even again in August if it's been, you know, if you have a feeling the fertilizer's been used up by then, to get them to just keep putting out leaves. The more consistently you feed and water them, the more consistently they will put out new leaves, provided their roots are settled and can do that.
Is it, if you're, I get a question, I don't know how to ask it the right way, but we had, growing up, a lot of pine trees, very mature cover, mm-hmm. and not a lot of underneath growth. So the yard was, you know, a nice, pretty yard, but very tall pines. Does the acidity of the pine have anything to do positively with it? Because it, you know, because it grew very well, and we didn't have to do a lot to it.
Yeah, it's one of the things that, first of all, the pine roots are notorious for spreading throughout their little thicket that they're in. And so that does loosen up the soil in many ways. So that helps the ivy. The acidification certainly goes on, but our soils are pretty acid anyway. So and the hetera, the English ivies, that group of plants, can grow in something that's moderately acid. If you were asking me, could you just go ahead and plant blueberries there, I would even say yes, probably so. Mm-hmm. I might get a soil test just to be sure, because that the soil there is probably very acid.
Yeah, which blueberries have always, to me, that's where, and you taught me that, I always wondered why they grew better around pine. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're
happy there.
They're just happy, huh? That's what they, I've seen
that
some very
and
mature.
Also, in early years, the afternoon protection from afternoon heat and sun helps any shrub grow. Mm-hmm. And that's basically, blueberries just a shrub, you know, so.
Is there an animal that loves blueberries more than birds? I mean, goodness gracious, squirrels maybe? I don't know.
I have known dogs that would
really?
Walk right
okay.
along underneath them and eat every one, yes.
Yeah. It's fun to watch the birds show up. It's like, man, I didn't know there were that many birds in the world. And birds and squirrels getting along?
You had not put out the alert until yeah. then. You know? So that's
Thank goodness they like them, too, because I've had a few bushes before, and the amount of blueberries that they'll put off at times is absolutely alarming. I mean, it is, you know, it's like, wow.
It's the best.
Yeah, isn't it?
It's the best.
You just got to have a lot more friends.
Looking at, well, or a bigger freezer, looking at some of the things that we do enjoy about this particular time of year, it is getting in that freezer and getting out the blueberries, because you'll see people, this is what hoarding is. Hoarding is putting those blueberries in the freezer and never eating them. That's not good. So get them out, make some muffins, make a cake, you know, even make a barbecue sauce, make a simple syrup, you know. We'll start vodka and blueberries.
Oh, my favorite. As I've told you, I love a simple syrup with blueberry. And blackberry is the other one that mm-hmm. I absolutely mm-hmm. enjoyed the most consuming. They're all the same to make, but something about blackberry syrup is a beautiful,
well,
beautiful
it's
blend.
It's beautiful to look at, and it has a nice punch to it without being overly sweet.
That's it.
I think that's part of its appeal for a lot of things. Hand pies, even, you know, much less drinks.
Yeah. Well, Mama made the hand pies. You know, she called them tarts. And
they were folded.
Basically biscuit dough and rolled out and, you know, into basically a circle. And throw your, and mm-hmm. she would make mm-hmm. Apple. We had the apple trees in her yard, and she would take those and make the syrup and jelly out of them, and then dice them up and put them in there, cook mm-hmm. them up. And
we do those everywhere in the world. Empanadas and hand pies.
I love
and
the fingernail
foldovers
press.
And, you know, all of that stuff, because you do crimp
press.
That corner, yeah. crimp all those edges.
That thumbnail was, yeah. that was yeah. always, that thumbnail was protected.
That's
that,
exactly
that
thing, right.
That was the one
That's
that
exactly
crimped
right.
everything. Yeah, I always loved the crimp. You know, you in life you forget things, but that's something I'll never forget is the tart, the hand
there
pie.
Is,
oh, man.
There's a really good reason why so many people decide to write or record memories like that. It's one of those things that not only carries the culture forward, but it carries you forward into the next piece of your life, because you know where you came from. And sometimes those are the things, I believe, that make the biggest difference. It's, you know... one of the best things that ever happened in my life was a mixtape cassette in a Christmas stocking. You know what I mean? That kind of really specific information provided, and in this case, music as well as a little Art Bell, just for me. So do that for somebody. Why not? You know, and these days you can just make them a file. You don't have to go out and make a cassette tape, but you can make a file and send it to somebody.
Oh, it's a lot easier. Yeah, have to buy the boombox with the two tape things in it. And
no, but those are making a comeback.
You know, I understand why.
I don't know exactly why, but those are making a comeback.
Well, the record player made a comeback, and you're going, why?
That's true.
Yeah,
I guess that
was one of the more difficult things.
I don't agree with Bob Dylan about a lot of things, but I do agree with him that vinyl does sound better.
It sounds better, but buddy, it is tough.
It's a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it's a lot of trouble in it.
Yeah. Can't put it in the car too easily. So
the new ones, they had like where you plugged into the into your lighter in your car. And I'm going, wow, that would be a little bit of a trick, playing a record while you're riding around in a car, especially if it's bumpy.
People watch television.
The most stable thing in the world with old record players.
No, that used to be in the corner of the room, and the kids couldn't go in that corner of the room because it would make everything.
It's protecting class.
Yeah, exactly. All right, now we got a couple of more recipes to come up in the next hour. We're going to talk about gazpacho. Fun stuff, huh? All right, now, I've got a quote for you. I never do that. I got a quote this week, and I got some more information about squash because I'm just on that today. This is the Garden Mama Show. Thank you for being here. Stick around. We'll be back.
Listen and watch all your favorite Super Talk Mississippi shows live and on demand. Listen to tons of music. Plus, get the latest breaking news from across the state with the Super Talk Mississippi app. The Super Talk Mississippi app. Download the Super Talk app on your iPhone or Android device now for free. Just search Super Talk Mississippi in your app store on your mobile device to get everything Mississippi all in one place. The Super Talk Mississippi app. Get it now. You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. Do you have an old, outdated website or just a Facebook page and still not bringing in customers? Targeted digital advertising from STMM Digital's highly trained and trusted staff is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started.
Show was previously recorded.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Who said this? You're a team kind of a guy, so tell, you know, despite the fact that you work alone in the dark for hours at a time. Play your part. Play it simple. Listen to what the other guys are doing and compliment them. Make them look good, too.
Jerry Garcia.
Could have been, huh?
I don't know.
Steve Cropper.
Okay, who's Steve Cropper?
I was hoping you'd ask that.
I don't know that person.
Okay. Steve Cropper, if you're depending on what age you are, you may know him as the long-haired guitar player in the Blues Brothers.
I love that guy. Yeah.
The
blonde-headed guy you're talking about.
He
right?
comes from Booker T and the MGs,
yes.
And he was the original guitar player with Booker T and the MGs. He was, in fact, Stax Music's musician, the studio musician.
Yeah, he was a session guy.
He came from there, but I'm just going to say this: they formed the first hit-selling integrated four-piece band out of Memphis. They invented that music. Now, they would probably not say that, but those of us who listen to it forever would do. And, you know, if you ever get up there and you get to go to the Stax Volt Museum and do that stuff, do it because it's important if you like the music that I like. Some of you do. But Steve Cropper never failed to look at the other person's work. Donald Duck Dunn was his bass player for all that time, Mal Jackson Sr. was the drummer. It was a four-piece band, two black guys, two white guys, and they changed the face of music forever. When you look at the tributes to Steve Cropper, they come from everybody because he influenced all of them. And what's even more amazing, because, you know, rock and roll, he was nice. Everybody liked him.
Yeah, he worked with a lot of people, as I read about Mr. Steve. He was so, iconic.
And his solo album is one of my very favorites. I keep it with me all the time just to listen. But all of that, he tells the stories about when they wrote Green Onions, and it was half joking, you know, half of a joke when they played the tune, and then his friend at the radio station played it on the air, so they had to do something with it. Then, of course, that was their first number one single. So anyway, I don't talk about people who've passed. I feel like that gets us into a deeper, darker place. But I do appreciate acknowledging people whose music goes on, and the fact that you didn't actually know his name means I should do that.
Of course, and when you have hits that you co-wrote, like Sitting on the Dock of the Bay with Otis Redding, In the Midnight Hour with Wilson Pickett, Knock on Wood with Eddie Floyd, Soul Man with Sam and Dave,
just, you know,
and Green Onions, Booker T.
In Soul Man, originally in the Sam and Dave version, they holler, "Play it, Steve." Well, they do that in the Blues Brothers too when they play it, and it's an anthem in our world. So,
I saw something on TV the other day. It had to be two or three days ago, where I don't remember what it was, and I'm curious if it was a tribute to Steve Coffer. Might have been like two or three days ago, but I saw Aykroyd. And they were dressed in the Blues Brothers attire, and they were performing. And I'm thinking, oh, that's kind of interesting. Hadn't seen that in a while, but I had no idea that a member of that group had passed. So thank you for sharing that.
They took him to Saturday Night Live. They did the movies, you know, the whole thing. So anyway, just a wonderful celebration of soul music from Memphis that's such a part of my DNA. So thank you all very much for that. And frankly, how else are you going to have a team if you're not paying attention to what the other guys are doing and make sure you're complimenting them? That's some of the best advice you can give to anybody. I don't care if you're talking about your bridge partner or your, you know, football team. You need to know what's going on around you. That's for sure. Wouldn't hurt to be that way in the garden either, my friends. I got to tell you, I've been looking at stuff and and I am amazed at the number of people that don't realize the simplest things to do. And I know the information's out there, but what I'm talking about now, of course, are you see the camellia flower, but they cut the flower off and don't show you any of the leaves because the leaves are ruined. We're lucky the flower even made it, because we didn't do the things that are basically essential for evergreens. And one of the biggest is, frankly, and this applies, actually, I shouldn't say evergreens, but to our most stalwart shrubs and trees, is that winter oil spray. I had someone tell me this week, "You say that every week in the winter." I said, "Yes, I do, because there's somebody listening that hadn't heard it, and there's somebody else that hadn't thought about it, and there's somebody else I needed to remind, you know." Because it makes such a big difference. When you're trying to have a sustainable garden that does not cause you to run to the garden center and get something that you don't know what it is and start spraying stuff in the middle of the summer to, you know, to control some bugs or to take care of some problem, if you want to try and prevent some of them, the activities that we take in the winter between pruning and cleaning up the garden and doing these oil sprays makes a big, big difference. It just does, and I encourage you to do that. I keep falling headfirst into the squash, Lance. Maybe I'm going to cook a bunch of squash now.
I think it's subliminal. You know, something is dripping.
I have literally fallen back in over here. But I didn't know this. I know that the category of there's winter squashes, butternut squash, spaghetti squash is actually a winter squash because it's a hard shell, even though we grow it in the summer. And, you know, harvested maybe the first part of July or August anyway. But those are actually winter squashes, because that's what the hard shell ones are called. I did not know that. But the other hard shells, of course, are things like delicatas and acorn squashes. Then we've got zucchini and courgette, which is basically just French for zucchini. Crookneck, straight neck, does it make any difference? There are people who will say yes or people who will say no. And my personal favorite, patty pan, just because it's also called UFO squash because of the way it's, we used to call it scallop squash when I was a kid, but that didn't stick. The patty pan name stuck because that was what it was named in the first place, but it's also known as UFO squash because it does look sort of like a flying saucer. But just some more squash things. As you're looking through your seed catalogs floating around on the online or in your mailbox, there are a whole lot of things that you can really appreciate and enjoy about this. If you've never grown anything except plain green cucumbers, grow some short ones that are intended for pickling. They're also very delicious, and frankly, you may not use up that whole cucumber, but you can use up an entire 4-inch long one. You've also got Armenian cucumbers. You've got lemon cucumbers. If you've not grown any of those things, you can see where I'm going with this. This is the great opportunity to start expanding your palate, start expanding your garden, and quite frankly, get yourself a few little presents this winter. I don't see any reason not to do that. By the way, Chester is not the only kid who invented something that's going to go a long, long way. That earmuff inventor inspired me to look around, and I found Miles Wu. This is being reported in Business Insider. Miles is 14. He just won $25,000. How, you say, did he manage to do that? Well, Miles says and has now proven that he has done origami and crossed it up with his studies in physics. The result is actually an incredible amount of weight in an origami pattern, that the paper pattern can hold 10,000 times its own weight in his experiments. That's pretty powerful stuff. Think of how many different things we could support if we could just bring something that was made of paper, fold it up, and it would immediately be able to hold, I don't know, bags of grain or boxes of electronics or whatever it is. It's going to be 10,000 times the weight of that each piece of that paper, and because there's so many of them, it becomes a very, very strong surface or container to hold them with. I just love it. I think it's so smart, and he won the money. He says he hopes that they would help with disaster relief down the way, and it makes sense that it would, because it would be a way to get things moved out quickly, because you wouldn't have a lot of inputs. You just have the origamis. So it's real smart. But he measured the weight that they can haul across various benchmarks. This is the Miura Ori type origami. I don't know the difference between one kind and the other, but you might. So it's just cool. It's really, really lovely. Just wonderful. Glad about him. Oh, let's see. Sarah's in Monroe County. She says, should I be concerned about the lighter leaves on this gardenia? Well, there are some that are a little bit lighter than others. Some of them do that. And this one's in a container. So I don't think I'm going to worry about it right this minute. I want to make sure that container is neither too wet nor too dry. I have an old gardenia bush here that has lost some of its leaves. They tend to do that in the wintertime anyway. But when it gets to be time for them to be growing again, that's the point where you want to take a look and see if maybe you certainly need some fertilizer that's acid forming, but you may also need to do a chelated iron application. But right now we don't know that that's necessary. If, on the other hand, you need for it to look green and be pretty, if you spray it with chelated iron, the leaves will turn green. So in 99 times out of 100, that will work for you. But it's not a problem. It's a phase of the growth, and it is something you don't want to go on for too very long, that yellowing on gardenia leaves. Oh, how sweet. This is really nice. This is marvelous. I have a 50-year-old camellia and althea that my grandmother rooted for me. I have a nephew that I want to give them to. How do I root these? Okay, there's a couple of choices when it comes to rooting camellias particularly. You want to pick a branch that is not blooming right this minute. And if you have some of those, which undoubtedly you do, you can get the real simple little kits and make air layers on it. Those are the easiest things. Air layering is simply making a wound in the stem that's still attached to the plant. But you make a wound in it, then you open that up a little bit and put some wet sphagnum moss around it to provide an area where it can root. And then you tie it at the top and the bottom, plastic wrap it, tie it at top and bottom. And then in a few months, you will see roots in the edges of that clear plastic. And it will let you know that you've got roots. You can cut it off at the base and then you have a plant. You can also wait until the new growth starts on the camellia, which will be shortly after it blooms. And when that new growth is neither bendy, you know, real easy to turn over in your finger because it's so green, but before it gets to where you can snap it, somewhere in that semi-soft, semi-hard wood stage, those cuttings will root as well. Again, it's a matter of cutting a sharp edge on it, putting it into some mix that's also very loose, but will support it, and keeping it watered, but not overwatered. That's how that works. Althea is a little bit easier because it does lose its leaves. You can take those cuttings, for instance, in the wintertime, that take 4-inch cuttings from the tips of the plants, do it right now, take 6 or 7 or 8 of them, wrap them into a tight bond, and put them outside into a bucket of damp sand and let them root that way. You can do it other ways, but that's one way to root Altheas. So that's lovely. I do not have a website per se at the moment. I have a lot of different ways to get in touch with me, though, and I'm going to send that to this questioner. It's mamaonair@yahoo.com, and I'll send you some info here in just a minute about the newsletter. The newsletter, just so you know, is $60 a year. This is the only time of year that we renew it. We go for, because it's just me doing it, so it's me and my team, I should say. But it's a very small operation. Going into this 7th year, I'm not ever going to have to compete with information from around the world too much, because it's just about the local Deep South. So I appreciate it very much. Comes out every Friday in your inbox, and at your email address, and it's just a joy to do. So mamaonair@yahoo.com, and I'll send you more details in your response here. I appreciate y'all so much. Thank you very much for asking. Here, you can win $6,000, Lance.
That would make me much richer.
Wouldn't that make me happy? That would make me so happy. I myself have heard of and even seen a little bit of environmental sabotage along the way. I once had a neighbor that offended so many people, there was a certain level of 2,4-D applied to part of their lawn. I had nothing to do with it, of course, but when I noticed the damage, I was able quickly to figure out who had done it and why. But in Maine, this is just so cool. They're offering a bounty. They're offering that $6,000 reward for information in order to get to find out who introduced this voracious fish into one of their cold water lakes. I really love this. Highly unlikely that there was a natural introduction, the warden says. At least only one realistic possibility, that is, that they were deliberately introduced.
sounds
so you can go up there, you might have to put on your Sherlock Holmes hat, you know, but go up there, do a little investigating. They're offering a $6,000 one. The lake it's West Musquash. It's a 1,600-acre cold water lake, largely undeveloped region down east, which is a beautiful but very wild part of Maine. I do know that.
The
lake was pretty much untouched, and several species of other things, but this one is likely to give them a bigger problem. Invasive largemouth bass. Interesting. Yes, sir.
Eat good. I think you'd have somebody down here going, yeah, you mean I can come up here and get paid $6,000 to catch all your bass?
Well, but
yeah.
You got to find out who introduced it. We got to get to the bottom of the plot.
A little investigation as well.
Yeah, we got to do a little, you know. What is that, 2020 or one of those things? A little investigating, 60 minutes. You know, they're animals in this world, creatures in this world. They're not actually animals in this case. Most of them are insects. There's some really crazy evolutionary stuff going on that people are beginning to talk about. We're having, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, the raccoons are attempting to domesticate themselves so that we will want them for pets. The one that's in the garage doesn't stand a chance here. But there are some people who found that to be a possibility for a pet.
Well, we need to teach them how to cross the road better.
I've told you my story, you know. No, actually, they're on their own. I love the one that came through my yard, had her babies with her, and I looked at her, and I pointed at the big dog down on the ground that was obviously very interested in her. And I said, you probably want to keep going down that fence. And she did. She turned and went in another direction with those babies, one in her mouth and two next to her, you know, crawling along the fence. But that's as close as I'm there, because I've been too close to them before. I don't think they're cute. They're not my spirit animal. Sorry. You want to argue with me?
I like possums too.
I like possums too. I like them all right over there.
Not in your lap.
Not in my lap. I will say that the day that we turned over the flower pot and found the baby possums in the greenhouse was one of the most exciting days of my life.
Yeah, my mom reached into a dog food bag one night to get some dog food out, and there was a little, she kept feeling something furry down in there, and it was a little possum, little baby.
See? It's, we just, life is full of interesting things that we don't even imagine until they happen to us. And there we go, you know? Oh, my. Yep. Well, we're going to let some of this nasally Christmas, I guess it's singing, take us out of here and bring us back. This is the Garden Mama Show.
T-shirt, 10 rounds of ammo, 9 bags of Redman, 8 Elvis records, 7 gravy biscuits, 6 Levi Bridges,
The Best Made Show was previously recorded.
I really feel like there's a children's story to be told about people's encounters with raccoons.
Of course. Be more like cartoons about
them. We have tales to tell here, yes. Well, you know, I love the angry beavers, so this is what this reminds me of, is the next thing will be the raccoons, the wild and crazy raccoons. But anyway, that's great. Request for the Merloton soup recipe. I sent one that's very close to what I did. The differences in my recipes are usually that I end up with a little bit more, I don't know, hot sauce, or in this case, cayenne pepper in it. But that's, it's pretty close. I had no idea that raccoons love sugar. I'm learning so many things today, y'all. Thank you.
I think they
much.
Like whatever you like.
Whatever's going on at the time. Right. Yeah, you may be right.
Whatever you want most, they're going to, if it's in the back of your truck, it's stolen.
You know, we think about so many of the creatures in our world. We talk about when you go to, for instance, when you go to control creatures, how many of them are you actually going to be able to get a grip on? If you've got mosquitoes, you might be able to get the mosquitoes in your immediate area not to bother you, either by wearing repellents or some combination of repellents and citronella plants, rather, and citronella candles and that kind of stuff. Those things will help. There are sprays. There's mosquito beater, you know, but that doesn't really make any dent in the population at all. So I'm often wonder, we hear about the fact that, for example, if you use the same insecticides over time, the creatures that survive that are the ones that continue to breed. So, of course, that particular product won't work anymore after a while. That's why, for example, when you are using you're in a fungicide program for something, you'll be recommended to switch between one and the other, each, you know, alternate spray, so you're not accustoming the particular pest that you have to any one particular product that you're trying to use to get rid of them. So it's an interesting thing. I always wondered, though, because you hear about these things, people will hook up batteries to stuff, you know, hook up wave patterns and look at these things. And now we've got a new set of this. The Institute of Science and Technology in Austria is reporting to us that, oddly enough, when the pupae, the babies of the ant population, are about to be extinguished by something, whether it's, you know, a predator or a person or whatever it is, they release a secret scent that until now was secret. Obviously now it's not. But they when they're doomed, they actually let the others know. So that kind of early warning system, rather, shows you just how finely tuned the colony is to all of its members, even the babies. I think that's fascinating. I have a problem, though. For example, what do you do next? In this case, the worker ants open up their containers, the containers of the babies, and then they turn around and release formic acid and do something to try and save them or to keep it from moving forward. They don't want those sick babies to get into the colony. So that kind of early warning system, though, is pretty interesting stuff. We have other ones that are even crazier, though, in this week's biological harvest, I have to say. If you ever heard of a hornet-eating frog? Well, neither had I. Kobe University in Japan is always researching these anomalies. It's always interesting to see what they turn their attention to. And in this case, what they're trying to figure out is how come this particular frog, as opposed to all the rest of them, is able to resist the venom of that particular issue. When the hornets release their venom, the frog is unaffected. They just have lunch. You know, they're just moving on. So we hope, of course, that this would help us understand about toxins and pain tolerance for them, and you know, it translate into other things because it's such an anomalous discovery. I love that. Those are the kind of things that somebody's got to do some research in order to find out about, and it's good. It's good to know about. There's also an awful lot of, as people say, there's always a new bug to worry about, and I think that's true. In this case, it's a tiny bee with devil horns, and they're really cute. I have a feeling this is going to be an anime character, if it isn't already, or one of those K-pop things, you know. But Western Australia, this is my creature feature of the week, y'all. The horned native dubbed Megachile Lucifer. You love that, because of the horns. Now, I think this is so funny. This is like so many other things. We were not looking for this, okay? We were not looking for this. We were looking, studying an endangered wildflower and found this creature, and they kept taking pictures of it and said, what, what? Now, Lucifer, of course, means light bringer, but it also was a reference to all of the Lucifer, Satan, devilish things. So it's really funny that they have this brand new one, only in the Bremer Range region between Norseman and Hayden in Australia's gold fields. Fascinating stuff. Brand new critters. Amazing. Let's see. Sister-in-law had a pet possum. Found it in the yard in a puddle. We had one in a puddle over here the other day. he was sweet until he wasn't. We can say that about so many creatures. In this case, the possum grew up and didn't like the people anymore. And we have ways to feed raccoons in our suggestion boxes here today. Lots of people love them.
They
can have
creatures.
The two in my garage here.
they're resilient.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, they're just not very good at crossing roads. I don't know. They're all their not. Strengths, that's the one thing that they have a weakness with. I guess everything needs a weakness.
Well, there's one way to control things, and then there's another way to control things. And in that case, the population control is for, you know, it brings us, which is better than some other things. No, I can't say that. If I say that out loud, somebody will get really mad, so I'm not going to do that. Let's move on to another thing. How many candles burn in the United States every year, do you suppose? Do you burn any, Lance?
Oh, yeah, I like
the candle. I burn a few.
Especially this time of year. You know, when you
70% of U.S. households burn candles regularly, 2 to 4 candles monthly. That's a big business. In fact, it's billions of candles. Isn't that wild? Now, it takes 44 to do Hanukkah, okay? So when you light one candle, you're lighting one, and the shamus is the helper candle that lights the other candles, okay? But that's the first night. Then the next night you do those, and you add one. Then the next night you do those, and you add two, and pretty soon you've got to the eighth night, and you've used 44 candles. But other than that, the average person uses 25 to 40 candles a year. I had no idea.
Man, that's a good number.
I had no idea. The 130 million households widespread use, this is just in the United States. Just incredible. Now, how do we know these things? Because of the fire department keeping the statistics. We know about sales based on, you know, but how many households are affected comes down to fire statistics. Pretty interesting stuff. That does not count the bayberries, which I'm telling you the reason. See, we used to make candles, human beings used to make candles, not me personally, out of tallow, out of, you know, animal fat. And that was handy because you could put a wick in it and it would burn, but it also smoked. So when they discovered the waxy covering on bayberry berries and other things too, but the bayberries just worked the best, they were able to take that and then eventually with a little bit of beeswax turn it into a candle that did not smoke nearly as much and also had that delightful smell to it. I had no idea about this. A bayberry candle burned to the socket brings food to the larder and gold to the pocket. I think that's right up there with eating, you know, black-eyed peas and cabbage on New Year's to fill your pocket. I kind of like that. Anyway, that's a little bit about the bayberries. It is a great Puritan tradition. It is one that I've enjoyed my whole life because I love the way they smell. And yes, it is pretty much, as Lance was saying, it's pretty much a thing for this time of year. This is they're also known as myrtle wax candles. You know, that's a pretty obvious. Anyway, I just think that's fun. It's some really very, very cool things. I have been looking at it this week at other ways and things to encourage smaller shrubs. I like the idea that we would have small shrubs in a row somewhere that weren't boxwood, that weren't necessarily a holly. If you have suggestions for me, I'm working on a story about the choices that we have. You can send that to me. You can also find out about coffee and newsletters and ask me garden questions, mamaonair@yahoo.com. I do check it every day. Sometimes I'm able to answer things and sometimes I don't, but I always do look in there to see what's going on. I've never been to Spain. Have you been to Spain? I've never been to Spain.
No, I'm their cousin, though. I've been to Mexico.
Yes. Well, Andalusia is in southern Spain. And Andalusia is pretty hot. It's pretty dry. And it's where gazpacho was invented because we needed a cold soup on a hot day with a little bit of spice in it because that also helps apparently with human beings dealing with the weather when these things change. I discovered gazpacho when I had a friend who was determined, long before raw foods were the thing, she was determined to cook everything in a blender. So she made gazpacho and then did not heat it up. Other soups, there always have been, you know, feed yourself with the Vita blend and all these kind of things, and that was what she was into, was to just make everything into some sort of soup. But the gazpacho was probably the only one that I cared that much about. It is traditionally tomato, pepper, a little bit of lemon, you know, some olive oil, some garlic, that kind of stuff. So it's a lovely tomato soup, and at the same time, it doesn't just taste like tomatoes. It tastes like everything else. So that's kind of fun, and it is all raw. But you can. Some people will put. I've seen this. I've never eaten it, but I've seen watermelon gazpacho, which sounded like a good idea. Sounded like a decent idea anyway. There are, in the photos today, we've been looking at some of the photos of the weeping yaupon and looking at the other larger yaupons. But there's also a couple of pictures of pansies in there. I want to encourage you, if you have not already done so, now that it's rained just about everywhere across the southeast and continues to do a little bit of that, it's time to fertilize those pansies, the snapdragons, the parsley, everything you've got growing that you intend to grow over winter for a spring harvest or a spring flowering. This is the time to take care of that. If we get into a week that is frigid and frozen and there's ice on the ground, you don't have to fertilize them. But other than that, from here through the springtime, you want to be feeding those plants because they are actively growing. Same is true of Brussels sprouts, by the way, if you happen to be growing those this time. I have, I remember as a kid, there was a movie called The Pawnbroker, and it was scary, very adult, as I recall. And I didn't know why that was, because the pawn shop, the pawnbroker in my town, was lovely. They had lots of things in there you could go and look at and you know, buy some things. You could take things and hawk them there and come back and pay them off. You know, you needed a little money. But I think they've gotten a bad reputation over time. Now, granted, pawnbrokers are not always, you know, they sometimes get a bad reputation simply because people take advantage of them. But I do believe that if you think about it a little bit, there's at least 10,000 pawn shops in the United States right now. Every state, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but every state has laws about having to report things that people bring to sell there or to pawn there. So about 30 million Americans every year take something to the pawn shop. I bought my first ring that I bought for myself at that pawn shop in my hometown. I'm sad that I don't still have it, but it was one of those things that because it was a pawn shop, I was able to give him some money down, and as long as the person didn't come back to claim it, you know, in the next 2 weeks when I could bring back some more money, I could buy the ring. So that was pretty cool. And later on, of course, those things got a little more solid. They don't sell you anything that anybody has the possibility of coming back to get. So I think that's important to know. They also do have to report things, do have to keep digital records. And if you're the one out there stealing stuff, you don't need to take it to the pawn shop.
Hey, before we go to break, Chad in Van Cleve was curious where he could possibly get 4 of those bayberries.
Well, I don't know.
He's closer to your neck of the woods.
I don't know. Mm. I have to look around a little bit. I saw his question, but since he asked you, I thought maybe you had a handle on it.
No, you know, I was going to start digging around if you didn't have a off the top of
the
head.
We don't grow the eastern one, but we grow we do grow the Mirica. We grow the southern one. So I'll see if I can figure out
the George Bush one.
I guess that's America. What that is. The America one. You funny. Sometimes we have to have a few things to laugh about in this world, my friends. Gardening's one of them. Have you ever done anything that was so dumb you couldn't believe it and you didn't want to tell anybody? Well, that's a story you can tell me, because I'm the garden mama. I have nothing but empathy for all of that. I've made every mistake there is to make, including pouring dirt into my boots once, but that's for another day. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Listen and watch all your favorite Super Talk Mississippi shows live and on demand. Listen to tons of music. Plus, get the latest breaking news from across the state with the Super Talk Mississippi app. The Super Talk Mississippi app. Download the Super Talk app on your iPhone or Android device now for free. Just search Super Talk Mississippi in your app store on your mobile device to get everything Mississippi all in one place. The Super Talk Mississippi app. Get it now.
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. Do you have an old, outdated website or just a Facebook page and still not bringing in customers? Targeted digital advertising from STMM Digital's highly trained and trusted staff is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
I feel more beauty. This show was previously recorded.
We have a couple of good questions on the text line this morning to finish us out today. Chad and Van Cleve wanted to know about getting those bayberries. what we're looking for in this part of the world is called Southern Wax Myrtle. It's related to that plant, and it also has the waxy coating on the leaves, which has been harvested for years for bayberry candles. So I sent him some information about that. I did not know that that plant, that wax myrtle, fixes nitrogen from the air. I did not know that. I should have known that, but I didn't. And that's another cool reason to grow it. It's a plant that grows rapidly. It makes a wonderful screen. It has these beautiful berries on it, and it also fixes nitrogen from the air, so that helps take care of itself. Its aromatic leaves are also used by chefs at times. I like that. Greg and Kathy said that they have their winter garden. We've been watching their garden. You know, we love their garden. They've got cabbage, lettuce, greens, and garlic. The covers with plastic on hoops for the cold. A lot of nights it's only going down to 28 or 30. Do I still need to cover at that temperature? Can they take 30 degrees for a few hours? They could probably take it, but it will be a setback. If you can consistently keep them right above 35 by keeping those covers on at night from late afternoon till morning, the plants will do better. Okay, I'm sorry. I know that's a lot of work. But it will set them back. It'll slow them down. And particularly things like the lettuce, it'll make the leaves wimpy. Okay, when is the best time to fertilize fruit trees and shrubs and flowers? Well, the best time to fertilize fruit trees, generally speaking, is after you prune them. And so if it's apples and plums and pears, you're going to prune those in the wintertime, so you fertilize after that. Other things like blueberries and oranges and figs, you're more likely to fertilize after you pick the fruit. Blackberries as well, you're going to fertilize after you pick the fruit. Trees and shrubs, if we're trying to get them to grow, we want to take advantage of the growing season, you fertilize them in the early part of spring, right after you know it's not going to freeze any longer. You start fertilizing trees and shrubs. The flowers really does depend on what kind it is, but if you're feeding perennial plants, generally speaking, we feed them as soon as they pop up in the springtime or the summer, depending on when that particular plant emerges, and fertilize them at that point, and maybe again, but certainly at the beginning to kind of kick them off. It's a good question. Let's see. It is Madison Gardner. It is not too late to sow more ryegrass. It won't have as long of a season, but unless we go into a pitch of really freezing temperatures, it will grow. Lost some of it in the freeze here back. How's yours doing, Lance?
Which one was that? I'm sorry, I was reading something. My ryegrass? Mm-hmm. The rye's doing okay.
Yeah. They had a little bit of damage. I'm going to suspect because it was dry and it got cold.
Dry, cold, and too much water all at the same time, it seemed, was a little bit more. But
set it back a little bit.
The second round, I reseeded, and it seemed to have done a little better. But again, still some of those issues, you know, but I've got plenty of
seed. Well, and you can seed all the way through the winter. It's just you don't have as long a season for it, and if you get a really cold patch, it won't come up and grow as well. But you can certainly add to your seedings.
Okay.
The tip regarding watering plants from the bottom has resulted in some very perky plants. It really does help. It really does. Yeah,
roses, I know that I've learned over the years, they like it from bottom up.
That's true.
Hose them down a little bit. They may not like that, but it makes them look prettier. Right. But man, they seem to really love the root watering.
Mm-hmm. I think we got everybody. Yeah, I think we got everybody. We keep having more and more good news about coffee. Daily coffee turns out now it's good for people with major psychiatric disorders. So if you have those, and I hope you're getting other help with it, apparently drinking the coffee isn't going to be a problem. It might even help. So that's pretty cool. We would like for you to not drink more than 4 cups a day. And frankly, if you drink 4 cups a day of Garden Mama coffee, you're going to be up kind of late at night because we are a caffeinated blend. Some people love that, like me. Some people don't. So that's the next piece of that. So much coming up this month. We will have an opportunity to have Mark in studio with us at some point. Ken Hackman will be back in. And, of course, Lance and I are carrying the ball straight through, decorating the tree and going all the way through Hanukkah and the new year. So I'm happy to say that we are here and glad to be here.
I wanted to say in regard to your coffee, it was funny when Birdman was here last time, I made the normal pot of coffee. And we started settling in, and it was about a minute before airtime. And I said, "Hey, Birdman, you doing okay?" He goes, "Yeah, this coffee's terrible." I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, it just doesn't have any body to it. And I said, well, that's one of those prepackaged things.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, okay. And I said, well, we really need to get you a Garden Mama coffee.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Because he obviously likes it heavy and thick.
Yeah, he's in our world.
Yeah, he's in the same world.
Now, of course, we got blends that are straight all the way through every sort of coffee. I'm happy to tell you that this is some very serious roasting going on out here. But, oh, that's beautiful, Greg. They send pictures of their covered rows and the way they roll back their plastic. This is just brilliant. It's a picture that we should save for everybody because it's a good one. Show that to everyone who considers putting covers on. Your system is really working. That's beautiful.
I saw not that exact place, but I've seen several lately that have the coverings over their plants, obviously the greens and stuff. Mm-hmm. And professional work. They must listen to Garden Mama.
We hope so. It makes things a lot easier than having to go out and patch up the problem afterwards. The more things we can do on the front end, the better we are in that regard. That's true about all of the garden, though. If we can get, for example, when you go to plant some shrubs, if you happen to be able to put down some landscape cloth underneath them, you will have fewer weeds. But you got to put it down first for it to be really effective and then plant through it. Cutting big X is just large enough to fold back, dig the hole for your plant. It's one of those things that makes a lot of difference in the way the shrubs do. And it also makes a lot of difference in your attitude because you're not out there pulling weeds every week.
One thing great about Greg set up and Kathy and Vaughn is they have a fence. It's it looks deer proof to me, so they'll have a great crop of cabbage, lettuce,
really
greens, and garlic. They will not be feeding the community.
We've got an edible cover crop in the Delta of some beautiful broccoli.
Oh yeah,
I love that. 'Tis the season. Who was talking about glockenspiels? It's an interesting musical instrument, but it wasn't us. It was somebody else.
I'm telling you. A glockenspiel?
Mm-hmm. It's a question in this land of texts. It's a good one. It's a very good one. You know, there's so much going on at this time of the year. The fact that you're willing and kind enough to put Garden Mama in your ear for a couple of hours and listen to us talk about plants and various and sundry other things really is a gift. And I get that gift every Saturday. Y'all are so good to me. Thank you for that. Thank you for your texts and your emails. Thanks for your subscriptions, and I'm really glad you like the coffee.
If you like the coffee, you're going to love the T-shirts.
That's right.
Trust me. Softest T-shirts in the business.
Really, really nice shirts. Yeah, we did well on that. We're going to do that again. That's a lot of fun. One of the things that's always a question is, what happens next in the sports world? And, of course, as we move into bowl season, you and I'll have a few things to talk about, leaning in your direction, I think, this year. But we're going to have some fun with that.
It's almost squeaky shoe season, so.
You're right. Yeah. You're right.
And after football, that's what you have.
That's right. That's right. You've got to hear all of that. Oh, this is great. Four beautiful, big 5-gallon buckets with holes in them. Jeff and Brenda are starting the worm farm today. I love that. That's so delightful. It's really easy to do, too, y'all. It's one of those things that everybody ought to have in their garage if they've got a little space for it in a shed somewhere, because the worms will do so much for your garden and also, frankly, take care of all of that produce rot that you got. Makes a lot of sense. I don't know the answer to this one. Thank you. See you next week.
Download past episodes at supertalk.fm. And contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Listen and watch all your favorite Super Talk Mississippi shows live and on demand. Listen to tons of music. Plus, get the latest breaking news from across the state with the Super Talk Mississippi app. The Super Talk Mississippi app. Download the Super Talk app on your iPhone or Android device now for free. Just search Super Talk Mississippi in your app store on your mobile device to get everything Mississippi all in one place. The Super Talk Mississippi app. Get it now.
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. Do you have an old, outdated website or just a Facebook page and still not bringing in customers? Targeted digital advertising from STMM Digital's highly trained and trusted staff is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
For all your
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.